This is your host, Ann Kamen. You're listening to WKCR FM New York, 89.9 FM on the dial, and WKCR.org on the net. And I'm here with composer Dennis Bathory Kitts, all the way from Vermont. Welcome, Dennis.
Hi.
We also have another guest with us in the studio tonight. That is composer Robert Voisey, who is founder of Vox Novus and artistic director for the 60 by 60 project. Hello, Robert.
Hello, Anne. Thank you.
Nice to have you here. So, Dennis, I understand that as of January 1st, 2007, you are embarking upon a highly ambitious project, and that is the We Are All Mozart project.
Right. Some people call it ambitious. Some people call it insane. I decided, actually some time ago, that I always wanted to write a piece every day. But I didn't want it to be vanity. I wanted it to be an opportunity to demonstrate that composers are not only sort of artists in the sense of airy, fabled creatures of marble, but actually were people who worked on assignment, like journalists, like teachers, writers for magazines, like illustrators, people that worked every day to do a job. And film composers are like that. In a sense, they are our Mozarts because they have the opportunity to write every day on deadline. But we non-poppers, those of us in the music that used to be called classical, are legendary for our inability to produce a lot of material and produce material on demand. And so I said, well, why not go for 365 commissions and have a piece due every day? That doesn't mean I write the whole piece in the day, but I have to finish a commission piece on the day it was asked for.
Okay, so that leads me to another question, which is how exactly does it work? You can start a piece. It's not that you have to write it within 24 hours. It's not composer combat.
No, because I couldn't possibly.
Self-imposed
combat. I couldn't physically write a piece for orchestra, 10-minute piece for orchestra in 24 hours. It's just not possible.
Okay, so you have to have finished one per day for all 365.
That's right. Yeah.
And this is no leap year we're talking about.
No leap year. No extras, just a plain old odd-numbered year.
And how many do you have so far?
Well, that's, of course, the problem. I have only 52 commissions. Now, most composers would say, 52 commissions? Yikes! But for me, that's, I mean, to have more than 300 to have happen before this project can take off. There's no point to it if there's not the full rank of days filled.
So in your blog or your online sort of manifesto about the We Are All Mozart project, you write that our ability to be Mozart is inhibited by lack of demand on our productivity, which you touched upon earlier. But could you elaborate on this idea?
Well, sure. I did a survey of composers, in fact, because I wasn't sure if that statement I had made was true. And what I asked was, how productive are you? 85 composers answered this survey. And I asked how productive they were, if they met deadlines, if deadlines were helpful. And basically, I did a kind of a pseudo-scientific look at this problem of productivity. It turns out composers are tremendously unproductive, if we think in terms of our regular old kind of free market capitalism notion of what it is to buy something that somebody makes. And composers, by and large, write half dozen pieces in a whole year, like write less than an hour's music in an entire year. But they still, when asked, can do it. It seems that they respond to deadlines, they respond to requests. So maybe, just maybe, my thesis that if we were asked for more, we could make more art successfully is a valid one. I'm putting myself to the test, of course, but I'm prolific in a sense anyway. I mean, I've always written a lot. I enjoy writing. I don't pretend to write great art. Sometimes some of it's pretty good. But I think if our goal is to create great art, I think we fall all over ourselves trying to get to the goal of greatness as opposed to produce the a piece of music, the piece of art.
Right. And in this, you're placing the agency in the hands of those who are doing the commissions, essentially in society's hands.
Right.
What's your theory behind that? Why not place it in the composer's hands and say, why don't you folks challenge yourself to deadlines?
Oh, because we can do that if we feel like it. I mean, there are many artists who have done the piece a day thing, but they are self-motivated already. So that there's nothing to demonstrate there. They are also creating what is their taste alone, which is okay. You know, it produces some great stuff. But at the same time, we don't really find anything out that way. The point of this experiment is to see, and it's not just for me, I'm inviting other composers to do the same thing. I think it's a very interesting prospect to say, I am exposing myself to public demand. Can I meet that? Can I do what we ask our teachers to do every day? I mean, if we can ask our teachers every day to go into a classroom and be imaginative and be creative and come up with a solution to the problem of education hour by hour, we can expect the same from ourselves as composers. I mean, that's a life of luxury by comparison. And I've taught, so I know how hard that it can be. And the same thing for your everyday journalist. I mean, sure, they don't produce great works of writing every single day, but they produce something that is literally, that is coherent, we hope, most of the time it is, and that reveals something to the reader. Mm-hmm. And if we go down the work of every person who has a creative part of their daily work, and we look at that and we say, how much of it is self-motivated and how much of it is demanded by others, we find that most of the time it's demanded by others, with the exception of a small niche of artists. And composers, by and large, fall in that exceptional niche. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how it got there, but it's there, and maybe it doesn't have to be there. And maybe this thing will fail. I mean, I'm perfectly, to use this kind of a touchy-feel world, I'm at peace with the notion of it maybe failing. But I hope it won't.
Well, it's an experiment,
yeah.
Is what it is. What it strikes me as.
Well, what I think is so interesting is it seems like the failure point is not in whether you can accomplish a commission a day, but more of whether you can contract the commission.
You realize that I am just this little guy in Vermont, and we don't have a very big population. And because the population is small, I have to depend on other ways in which to get that message out. Were I in a major media market, in a sense of where I am sitting right now in this radio studio, that opportunity expands. But we're in a chicken-egg kind of thing with any project that we do. And in my case, it's one of the media in general are more interested when the commissions are already in place than they were willing to follow it through. But a speculative project, they're not. So I've had to generate these commissions at great effort. And I don't think it's any measure of the project's success or failure whether I, a guy out in rural America, can accomplish that. But rather, I've initiated it. And if my project does not get filled, someone else will do it at some point. And I have no sort of psychological ownership to say, this is my project, you can't have it.
Right, right. So let's say you have a listener in New York City that wants to commission something from you. What are the guidelines? What would they do? How would they do it? Why would they do it?
It's so crass, Mr. Voicey. I am being so crass with this project. What I'm doing is I'm selling the commission for what I call $1 per measure part. So if somebody has a piece for clarinet they want, that's $1 per measure. If it's for piano, well, it's two parts, treble and bass, so it's $2 a measure. If it's for organ, you know, string quartet is $4 a measure, orchestra is $28 to $40 a measure, and so forth. I mean, it's as crass as you can get. The whole kind of concept is putting myself in that free market demand stream to see whether something significant ends up happening from that. It may be badly composed, you know, that's part of the failure. It may not reach its goal. I consider that more a geographical failure than anything else. But yeah, those are the terms. It's like, you know, you buy the piece, you say, here's what I want. And an interesting thing, if I can just sort of expound on that a little bit, is that I had commissions from people who don't have repertoire for their instruments. This has been the most interesting thing. People have commissioned me for ukulele, mando cello, tenor guitar, accordion, theremin, as well as more traditional combinations of instruments.
Are these people who are learning this instrument and they simply don't have stuff to play, or this is...
These are professionals.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, one of the tenor guitarists is here in New York and has been playing the instrument for years, but there's just not any repertoire for it. He has to arrange things of others to make it work. And the same thing with the mando cello player, same deal. He has to arrange things because nobody writes for those instruments. And so this is an opportunity for individual artists who don't have repertoire to increase the repertoire. And cheap. I mean, dollar a measure. I feel like the carnival barker, Come step right up, $1 a measure, throw the ball if it hits the, But it's fun. It's fun to conceptualize it that way. And if you think about the opportunity for a soloist to get a piece, a coherent piece at a low cost versus an orchestra would actually be paying a comparable commission, heavy commission price to get an orchestral piece under those terms. But this sort of non-sliding scale has affected the solo repertoire where soloists can't get a piece written for them that they can afford. And so this is kind of a way of, I feel like a salesman, but in effect, that's what it is. And I think this is an interesting way of being an artist, at least for a time. I mean, I would be exhausted if I were in the position of Mozart, and that's why I call this We Are All Mozart, because I believe that all of us have the ability in there to meet the demand that a guy like Mozart had to meet. I need this, I need this one, I need this one. And he's writing two or three pieces at the same time, and one's for the weekend concert, and one's an opera that he has to have premiered, and another one is a series of symphonies. I mean, these are things that he produced, some for his own interest, but by and large, on demand. I mean, can you imagine if we as artists were all in the position of having this level of demand? And I think demand creates demand.
It seems like a chicken and an egg thing to mention just what we were touching upon earlier, that you're kind of taking on the chicken and the egg at once, which is what I find really interesting. We talked about agency. Is it because of the demand that people are going to write this much? Is it because they're self-motivated that they write this much? And it seems like you're sort of attacking both at once, and you're saying society or people out there, you need to demand this, you need to want this in your life, you need to have a little more of this in your life, and you artists need to provide it. So that is a really interesting approach, one that's ambitious.
Before, you started this by saying that it's ambitious, and it is ambitious, but that's not the reason for it. Isn't the ambition the reason for it? Is because I have been dedicated to the presentation of new non-pop for my entire adult life. I've been an advocate for new music, not just my own, but for composers. I've created festivals and presentations and venues and media events to have more and more of this music heard. And this was just one more idea in the stream. And I think talking about it in marketing terms sometimes matters. And I just wanted to try that on to see if that would work.
Well, I'm also kind of curious, are you particularly targeting musicians or?
I wasn't. I mean, that was that aspect of it was a surprise. I never even conceptualized the idea that there was a body of instrumental players out there who didn't have any stuff to play. And that came as a surprise. It was a delight. It was great that happened. But I don't think I'm answering your question.
No. You're talking about demand. This seems to be the most crucial point to that. And it's interesting in the fact that there's so many players out there with demand that can't find composers. Meanwhile, I know one of the biggest complaints about composers is that there's no musicians that want to play their music.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like there's just a big disconnect. And I guess that's a kind of a follow-up.
That's right. It's a big disconnect. And I think both the opportunities are there. The players that want to play it and the composers that want to write it are there. It's a matter of matching it up and also of assessing the psychology of composition by the composers themselves. They've got to deal with the image that they have created about what they do. And a lot of younger composers are doing that. I'm just this old guy sitting here, saying, because I'm mostly talking about my generation, which did more damage, I think, to the visibility of new composition than probably any other. But yes, I think we've got to connect those two pieces together. There's a younger audience. There's a vital audience out there who have not had the opportunity to hear this amazing repertoire being composed day after day after day. And I mentioned a couple of composers once before when speaking with you, and that was Charles Coleman and Gene Pritzker, two amazing composers whose work would just turn on any orchestral audience who heard it. I mean, just make you jump out of your seat. It's so exciting.
So is successful in what ways do you think this project will change the image of the composer?
If it's successful, I think other composers will find the opportunity to market themselves in a kind of a clearer way. I'm not saying that they should, you know, take out ads in the paper and say, you know, I'm available for commission, but merely say, I'm excited to write for you. I would like to write for you. Can we come up with a way of making that happen? A personal approach, and not a come to me, I'm the artist, and maybe I'll do it. I use the example of Debussy, who was asked to write an opera in just a few months. And his response was, a few months? It takes me that long to decide between two chords. And like talking about getting over it, that's one of the things that I think our responsibility as composers is to get over. And I'm not talking about composers having to change who they are, but rather find out who they are. And if that person inside is capable and willing to work within this kind of stream of buying and selling, let's try it for a while. It doesn't have to stick around, but once the ears of the orchestras, the performers, and the public hear what's out there, it's no longer necessary.
Before we go any further, why don't we listen to an example of what can be written in a day? This is a piece called In Brassi Splenda, written by Dennis, of course, for his wife's birthday party. Was a fun piece and one with a sort of everyday marketability to it.
I'm always listening to music in kind of commercial situations. My wife is interested in equestrian things, and I listen to the music used behind equestrian dressage events, and I say, why are they using stuff pulled off of Broadway shows and bad arrangements of 1980s rock and roll when they could have a composition, the cost of which would be as much as the royalties they're paying on this stuff anyway?
Mm-hmm, exactly.
It's the systemic replacement of one kind of off-the-shelf music with a customized music, and I think that's a really valid approach. You know, I hear my own words and I think, boy, you know, this sounds so cheap. And I don't mean it to sound that way. I really mean it to be a way of bringing the artist back into the day-to-day lives of people who listen to music. We have it with all the popular arts. We have it with literature. We have it with theater. We have it with film. We have it with we have it even with the visual arts, and we have it with all of those except music. That's our one exception, and once we figure out the reasons, or even if we don't figure out the reasons, if we figure out a mechanism to overcome that, we will become part of what people think about every day. Don't grab, you know, the wind beneath my wings for your wedding. Have your local composer create you a piece for your wedding.
So just to kind of follow up on my question before, so your target audience was actually the people, just regular?
The listener, obviously. But in order to get to the listener, you have to get through the performer. You have to interest the performer.
I mean, to me, what it sounds like is you're basically just throwing a bunch of seeds out there and seeing where they sprout and where they land. I mean, do people, are they going to start buying them for
horse races? Or they buy them for their wedding, birthday party? And you're just sort of saying, I'll do it all. Yeah, you want me to do your kid's birthday party? Yeah, I'll do your kid's birthday party.
Absolutely. I had a composer commission me who said, you know, I'm always writing pieces for my friends. I want you to write a piece for my friend, you know, because I've done it already. He doesn't care about my stuff anymore. Write me something for him. And we have examples. I mean, you know, Stravinsky wrote that great fanfare for, what was it? I forget what he wrote this great fanfare. Was it Lincoln Center? I forget what he wrote this great fanfare.
I think it's for Lincoln Center.
Yeah. And Wagner wrote the wonderful piece for his wife's birthday. I'm missing the name of it now. It's a beautiful, exquisite little orchestral piece for just strings. And you go down through history and you find these little gifts that composers do all the time. Things they write for friends and things that people have asked for them. They're doing it. What happened? Where did the disconnect take place? I want to sort of buy this ridiculous project, this We Are All Mozart project, to, in fact, its serious side is showing that, in a sense, we are all Mozart. And I know there are people who are saying, you know, there's only one Mozart, there's only one genius. But Mozart did not exist were it not for a milieu in which his work was wanted. And if we're not in that environment today, that's what we have to fix first.
Well, I mean, if you think about it, if there was no need or want for his music, he wouldn't be around.
Yeah.
And we wouldn't have it.
Yeah, that's part of the point, you know, right. that demand slowed down because of changes in, and also the rise of the romantic artist, too. I mean, you know, we're good at self-suicide that way.
It's interesting because if you tried to put it into the nature versus nurture, this is clearly a nurture side of it. You know, the audience has to be there. But at the same time, I see you sort of topping the giant of the genius, you know, which is something that has... For artists who can't make a living, can't get any money, that image has hurt artists and is no longer useful. It was useful at a time when people bowed down to the genius, but let's face it, they're not doing that anymore.
No. they are if the genius is doing films in Hollywood.
Right.
There's a difference in how we approach things, and we've shifted that as a society, and as composers, we have not accommodated that change. Well, doesn't mean we compromise our work. We find ways to make our work with complete artistic integrity, but for the circumstance in which it is needed. Before, the circumstance of need was our only our own need in making it. Mm. Change that equation, and you may make incredible discoveries. I keep thinking back to Debussy and thinking, well, what if somebody said, well, you know, sorry about your two-chord problem, but you're going to do the opera anyway. I mean, it would have been really interesting to see what pushing the artist would have done. Maybe it would have been a total catastrophe. Maybe it would have revealed discoveries the artist had to make to solve the... Here's another example. Stockhausen, when he was working on his great, marvelous thing that influenced me as a young composer, the Gesang der Jünglinge, the wonderful Song of the Youths. It was never finished. What you hear is actually an incomplete version. He was up against a deadline for that piece. He had to make compromises against his vision that involved changing the notion of sort of the atomization of music into this. This must follow this, must follow this, to let's just twist the knob. We've got to get there. Let's turn the knob and make that happen. And the pressure of having to deliver the piece created a work of what I consider consummate genius. One of the greatest works of the 20th century was done on deadline and isn't even finished to this day. So what do we discover? Those are the things that we discover. We discover failure and we discover success in ways we can never have imagined.
Right. Well, most things sort of come that way, don't they?
Well, it seems so obvious. But how come it hasn't been obvious to us louts, us layabout composers for the past century?
It goes for your project as well. I think, I mean, if you do 364, is it failed?
Or if I do 365 really bad pieces, has it failed?
But is there such a thing as success or failure in this context? And is it not just a process of you're going out there and doing something?
Well, sure there is. There is success and failure. And I think... If there weren't, the project is meaningless. If we learn from the success and we learn from the failure, but if we don't have either one, if it's just sort of some sort of average, everyday nothing, then we don't grow. I mean, you know, people can point to me and say, what an idiot. And that's just as good as if they say, well, a couple of good pieces came out of that, or it was surprising how amazing that is, or somebody came to me and asked me to write a piece because of that project. I mean, those are the things we learn. Those are success. It's not, in this case, I don't, you know, I'm a process guy, but in this case, no. I've outlined the project as being a success-failure thing with parameters of success and failure. And actually, Rob helped me outline some of those by his saying, you know, what if I didn't get the, and I never considered that as being a parameter of success or failure. What if I didn't get all the commissions? And now it's one of the pieces in the equation for me.
And what are the parameters?
Well, Rob's addition to the parameters, which are whether or not I can interest enough people, whether or not I can actually physically complete the 365 pieces as requested, what level of quality, and I know that's the big bad Q word, but what level of quality the work will be. And I think as artists, we have some notion of what the value to ourselves and what the technical value and the various other value words, those kind of sort of market-oriented words are, as well as integrity of the work, whether it has integrity and has meaningfulness, whether that happens, whether, in very technical terms, whether or not the work is appropriate for the instruments and the performer who requested it. That's a big aspect of the relationship between composer and performer is. And many performers historically have rejected works as insufficient. Berlioz's great piece for viola, Harold in Italy, was rejected by the violist for whom it was written. And so we have to evaluate that. And so ultimately, there will be all these kinds of parameters of evaluation. And at the end of it, some things will be known and some things will still be unknown. And we'll get there and find out what they are.
Mm. I think it's so funny. I mean, well, actually, all three of us are kind of big promoters of new music in different ways. For me, it always comes down to the disconnect. Oh, like, why do we need to work so hard and be ambitious and so forth? Mm. It's to kind of bridge that gap. Of course, the 60 by 60 project, I do this by creating a very easily producible show. And my idea is to get the listeners involved and so forth.
It's a remarkable concept of access to new music. I'm assuming that the listeners may know about 60 by 60, but if not, let me summarize it as the creation of 60-second works by composers combined into concerts of 60 of them and distributed in a recorded format so that they can be used in concert and in various locales throughout the world. I think it is absolutely, speaking of genius, which I mentioned before, it was a stroke of genius to come up with that idea. And I think it has done so much for the ears of those people who have the opportunity to hear it, and also for the composers who were circumscribed by the 60-second limit. It seems absurd. And then you think, 60 seconds. 60 seconds is twice as long as the average commercial we see on television, and yet an entire message is carried through by that television commercial. A visual message, an audio message, a message of montage, subliminal messages, all sorts of things. Well, this is 60 seconds is relaxation then for a composer to be able to do. It's not circumscribed at all. You know, and so that's what went through my mind the first time I got the opportunity to work with you on that. And I think that those are the kinds of things that we as composers and we as composers advocates have to do in order to restore a sense that we have some societal meaning. We failed in our connection to our own society. It was our doing. It was not the orchestra's fault. It was not our listeners' fault. We failed somewhere along that line. And not because we wrote naughty, inaccessible music. No, that's another story. That is not the story we're talking about. The story we're talking about is how we let go of our responsibility to be members of a growing and changing society.
So what is your suggestion to someone who wishes to participate in this project?
Let me put it into numbered items. Number one, take the money and find your nearest local composer and do it. Number two, if you'd like to, find me.
Would they find you?
And they'd find me by looking up We Are All Mozart on the web, and it will lead you to my website.
Well, this is very exciting. We're all looking forward to see what happens in 2007 with the We Are All Mozart. Was there anything else anyone wanted to add?
I hope I still have a home life. It's going to be a rough year.
Great. Well, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks
a real
so
pleasure.
Much.
You've been listening to Arts and Answers on WKCR FM New York, 89.9 FM on the dial, and WKCR.org on the net. This is your host, Anne Kamen, and we've been interviewing composer Dennis Bathory-Kitts along with composer Robert Voisey. Stay tuned for the African show next.